and welcome to episode 236 of Checkpoint Chat. My name is Alessandro Barbosa. I'm joined by Matthew Figuera.
We're getting very close to the time shift, my side. Which means I'm going to start recording at the crack
ancient
of dawn.
Art of daylight savings.
Love it.
You can save your candles.
I honestly thought that was being done away with like years ago, but
I also thought maybe that was a hot rumor. I heard something about that. Yeah.
Hot rumor.
I do recall the same as you, like hearing that they were thinking about doing, because it is kind of pointless in today's age, I think. But I think it's at the end of October that it kicks in. Yeah. So then we'll be 2 hours separated. Mm. So that's going to be interesting wrinkle to navigate.
Actually, have to light a candle to navigate to my PC.
Can't use the phone. Can't use modern technology. Has to be a candle.
I could be wrong, but I don't think much is going to change, because the way, so if you're watching the video feed, new background, and it's hardly a new background. All I've done is I've pivoted my setup, because it's got wheels, pretty handy. So you've got this beautiful view of my blind. But I can't put it open because it just floods the camera, and you know it doesn't look good. So this
overexposes
is
the camera.
This is the scene you're probably going to see forever. So you'll never know. I suppose
you'll never know. Are we recording in the evening? In the morning?
I suppose
you'll never know.
These strips will be not as light.
It would just be dark behind
them.
It'll just
be so dark behind me.
You just see the street light behind them, like bleeding.
Depending on what time the sun rises and what time we record, then I could probably have it open. It'll just be nighttime. It'll be very confusing.
And it'll be 8 a.m. here and it'll look like nighttime at you. That will be quite strange.
Very,
that would be quite strange.
It's interesting. I'm going to take some...
Daylight savings are weird, man. Yeah. I work with a bunch of people who have to adjust their hours because they like... support people, and some of them are assigned to, you know, American and UK regions, and like they're like work hours shift, so it will go from like 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. and change to like 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. and then change back.
That's a long day.
It's horrible. Well, if you're on the American side, your day only starts at like 2 p.m. and then it ends at like 11.
That is so weird.
Yeah, it's weird. I think the strangest thing for them is that on Fridays, everyone comes in at the same time, because like Fridays are like an admin day. So on Thursday, the American team works till 11 p.m., but then they're expected in the office at like 8 a.m. And it's like
crazy.
That must mess with you so that much. I don't know if I could cope with that.
Yeah, that's... I suppose
they seem to not mind, because it means not working till 11 p.m. on a Friday night.
Yeah. And also means, I suppose, you only start again at Monday at 2 p.m. So it's like,
that's true. It's like a bit of an extended
weekend.
Yeah.
I guess that's very weird. I don't know if I could vibe with it. I mean, for me, I remember when I started on the Xbox accounts, when we obviously align with the UK team, who are the time we are now. So work hours in South Africa were 9:30 to 6. And that in itself is like, that is a very late start. I don't know if I like that. I much prefer starting earlier and finishing earlier. But the more I did it, the more I was like, having the option to sleep in, what a winner.
Oh, of course. Yeah. I think you do get, you probably just get used to it after a while. But like that initial not having stability would... completely freak me out. Like I need to know, like, I get up at this time every day, I go to bed at this time every day. For it to change like once a week in the middle of the week is kind of nuts to me. I can't wrap my head around that.
It is weird as well that you finish at 11, you have to get up early. No thank you. Just like a really long work day.
I guess for you with the daylight savings will be weird for like a few days and then it's just normal again.
It'll be normal. And then
it's just an hour,
And then my day will shift. I'll be working from 7:30 to 4, which is like, it's an early start.
Because you're
early.
Still working South African hours. Mm. Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay, so you'll start quite early, end quite early.
Yeah. go to bed.
Get home. Like an old Lenske man. Expects you to cook then because you're home early, you know.
Pick up all the house responsibilities, of course.
Of course. Mm. Yeah, of course.
But the kids too big.
Because I assume her stuff is still going to just stay the same
still,
time.
It's still normal hours, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's kind of funny because that is what it was like in South Africa. Her work hours were 7 to 4. I was 9:30 to 6. So we've just done a complete flip.
But I guess now your commute is going to be different because you It'll should be commute together.
Yeah. Mm. Well, there'll be days we'll overlap, but yeah, it's going to be different. Just takes some getting used to.
More Tears of the Kingdom time on the bus.
More Tears of the Matty. Like, no.
Yeah, Tears of the Matty. Why am I up so early?
When my bus will by myself.
Yeah, the bus will be so empty because no one's going to work at that time.
I don't know.
Your coffee place even be up in that early. Who knows?
It will actually. We went to Ipswich at the crack of dawn yesterday. We left our place at 6 in the morning. So our little corner coffee place is open at 6 in the morning, which is cool.
Love to see it.
But we caught a bus to Liverpool Street station, like the central station in London, and there were actually quite a lot of people on the bus. I was very surprised. Mm. Like, why are you guys up so early? Start asking random people, why are you here? What's going on here? Yeah, it was like getting used to, but I don't know. I came from really enjoying getting up. Well, I enjoyed having early hours to having to adjust to having later hours, and I've actually liked both. So,
Yeah. I mean, you come from a place where it's like you had to get up early because you had to drive to work early anyway. Most of the time, yeah, like
yeah.
So I don't think it's much of a difference.
No.
I think it would just be a difference to us now because my 8:30 to start recording is no longer 8:30 for you. Well, 7:30 for you. It's now 6:30, which is like
that's fine though.
Obscene. So we'll figure
I'll do
it out.
No, I'll happily do it. It's all good.
You say this 6:30 on the weekend. I don't know if I'll do it. I'm just letting you know.
Well, unless you're planning on moving to. I don't know, America, where we have to adjust the other way around.
Oh my God. No, that would be the end of this podcast. Yeah, it would be game over.
Too steep.
Yeah. That's 9 hour difference. There's just no making that work at all.
I'm recording Saturday evenings now, canceling dinner plans.
Yeah, exactly. Saturday mornings for me, yours are Saturday evenings. Or you do Sunday mornings and I do Saturday evenings.
I know.
Very strange. Very, very strange.
Yeah.
We'd have to date the episode differently depending on who publishes it, you know.
That is hilarious, yeah. America, why do you date your stuff like that?
Oh God, yeah, because it's then it's whole like month, day, year. Mm. Like absolute insane people. It just does not make sense at all.
Does not. Is it?
Just be like the rest of the world. Why is it so difficult?
Is it the 10th of October or 1st of January? We'll never know. Oh
yeah,
wait,
we'll never know.
Of October 10th. Yeah, I don't know. It's confusing.
Why use Fahrenheit, a temperature scale that's logarithmic? So it's not like it's insane. It's the most insane scale I've ever seen. Why?
Listen,
you know, miles per hour is fairly inoffensive. I just don't understand why they have to use it.
Yeah.
Anyway, but the UK has stuff like that as well. Like they do measurements in like, or like weight measurements in stone and stuff
miles
like that, which is also
stone
like, what
and
the fuck
like,
does that
why?
Mean?
Why? I don't know.
Yeah.
But then we've noticed, Lenske actually pointed out, when we talk to other people who run, they still measure in kilometers. I'm like, oh, it's running just...
Oh, really?
Not miles. It's I ran 10Ks. And I'm like, oh, okay. You didn't run like 6 miles?
Yeah.
Like, okay.
That's weird, actually. Because when I see people on Twitter like posting runs from Strava in the States, they're definitely talking about miles. They're like, did a 5 mile run or a 10 mile run?
Mm.
And I have to like sit there thinking, okay, that's like 7Ks and then like, what, I don't know, like 15Ks almost. So.
Yeah. 16Ks.
Nonsense. Yeah, 16. Yeah, exactly 16Ks actually. Yeah. It's quite a long run, 10 miles. Jeez.
Not just a pretty face, this guy.
Yeah. Just math. Pure math. Right
on
there.
The fly. No calculator. Look, my hands are empty.
Don't have the Casio calculator on my wrist either.
Not wearing my Casio wristwatch either. I just want to point that out. Amazing.
Oh, God. Yeah. Miles and kilometers. Weird. Just like they are in video games.
Spider-Man, Miles Morales.
Spider-Man, Miles Morales.
Out in 2 weeks.
Miles per hour, the real name of Tails in Sonic. Oh, no. Who knows? Yeah, Miles per hour. Miles per hour. Video games. We talk about them. Because this is the podcast, I can't assume that everyone watched the reviews we put out midweek. But if you did miss them, yeah, Matty and I put out kind of comprehensive reviews for Forza Motorsport and Assassin's Creed Mirage. In the middle of the week, like just after the embargo's lifted. So you can go watch those. There's some footage to accompany those. But I guess like there's not much we've been playing since Wednesday. Now Saturday. I nearly finished Mortal Kombat 1 story mode. I think I'm on the last chapter. Because I just played as Liu Kang. So now...
Who are you playing as chapter, now? Oh, you don't know.
I don't know. I never got to the... I had to pause and then I never got back to it yesterday.
Amazing.
That story is fucking nonsense at the end. Oh my God.
It's great. So this is where we go... Okay.
It just goes off the rails. Like...
Yeah. That's...
In the dumbest ways.
I really badly want to talk about it, but we'll talk about it next week, maybe.
I'm just trying to get the idea of there's a whole battle around people trying to destroy an hourglass. And I was just like, what's happening? What is happening in this game?
Oh, like, you're in that. Oh, that story beat was great. It's just like, oh no, the hourglass.
Oh no, let's all shoot lasers at the hourglass. Like, and also, like, Liu Kang's like, we need to stop him from destroying the hourglass.
And then
I'm
going
to run
him
to the right and fight someone else.
Yeah.
And it's like, what? Like, what are you talking about?
Like, that's the priority. Surely you would, you know, focus on him. This is spoilers without context. It's great. Love it.
It's absolute nonsense. I love every time Shang Tsung is talking on screen because he's got such a schmarmy, like, punchable face, and his line delivery is so, it's so like, he's like the only one in the room who knows he's evil type of thing. Like the way he talks, he's talking with such like cynicism that he's like, how the fuck do these people not understand that I'm going to betray them type of thing.
Yes,
it's so incredible.
I'm Shang Tsung.
Yeah, and Liu Kang's like, I will fight you if you double crosses. And he's like, ha ha. Yeah, you know.
I would
like,
never do that. Crosses his fingers.
Exactly. It's so stupid. It's so funny. It's
looks
I love
at the
it.
Camera is like, I'll never betray you, Liu Kang.
Yeah. Wink. Yeah. And his smiles are so exaggerated. He's just like, when he has a thought that you can clearly see, he's like plotting something, he just like smiles, he's like, and then he like talks. It's like
Shang Tsung, like most evil character in Mortal Kombat, also world's worst poker player.
Yeah, literally the world's worst, but thankfully he's playing with people who are also the world's worst so poker players, like just so
Liu Kang's
stupid.
Like, why is Shang Tsung pulling that dumb face? I guess I'll just go all
in. Damn. Shang Tsung loves smiling. Oh, it's so nice of him.
So good of him.
So nice to see someone happy with their life. You know?
When you're done with the story mode, spend like an hour or two in that. I don't even know what it's called. There's like another mode where
that like board game thing.
Yeah. Is it a board game? It's like you moving through.
I saw someone describe it as Mario Party, but Mortal Kombat.
Kind of, I guess. There's no dice rolling, none of that. I don't know.
No dice rolls, lots more blood.
Lots more blood, yeah. Mortal Kombat, it's great though. I think you need to wrap up Mortal Kombat and have a quiet moment and go play Street Fighter VI's real good bad RPG.
I don't have to. At this rate, I'm looking at the calendar and thinking about whether I'll be able to finish Zelda before the end of the year, and that is my main priority at the moment. In amongst Spider-Man and Alan Wake and
your boy Mario is coming as well.
Mario's coming. I'd like to play Assassin's Creed, but who the fuck knows if I have time.
Yeah.
There's a lot to do. I mean, I've only done one temple in Zelda.
I'm on my third one.
There's so much.
Only recently.
So much.
Nearly 100 hours in, third temple.
Oh, fuck. Nah, I'm fucked. Game over. And there's just
also,
no chance I'm finishing
You might not
game.
Play the way I do. I'm at your exploring the surface, going down to the depths, ticking things off. Like I'm playing meticulously, and that's not the way I'm doing the same,
or at least I'm trying to do the same. But yeah, I was like, cool, I'm going to go towards the bird people. And that was like months ago. And now I've just been stuck finding all sorts of other things.
Discord, we just describe people by like one attribute. Like it's the bird people. I'm in the fish village at the moment. Like
the fish village. Okay.
The fish people eat fish.
And then there's the rock people and then the
desert people.
The desert people. Mm. Okay. Okay.
It's good.
I'm just trying to the side quest I'm doing now is trying to figure out how to access the fairies. But like everything points towards a city, that Hetano village, which is fuck far away. It is so far in the other direction to where I am. Like I'm just like, do I really like deviate this far?
The fairy quests are like very, not convoluted, but if I compare them to Breath of the Wild, Breath of the Wild's like, oh, there's a fairy, they'll upgrade your armor.
Yeah, like, exactly. Yeah, I've found two, but they trapped.
Oh, all four of them are like, I'm not coming out unless you do this. I'm like, I don't know where to find that.
Yes. It's like, I know of the traveling music band, but I need to solve the quest of the Hetano like press, the journalist people. What the fuck is going on here?
Listen, so
I just want to upgrade my armor, man. That's all I want to do.
I just want to give you like three bokoblin gills, teeth, whatever you want to call them.
And, and just upgrade my pants. That's all I want.
Please, thank you.
Yeah, please just make my pants block more damage. That's all. I don't care if you like hearing the trumpets at night. Like, oh, that's not what I'm here for.
I was talking to my brother. He's playing Breath of the Wild now. And he's like 40 hours in. I think he's done one or two of the shrines in that game. And he's just saying like he's so tired of his weapons breaking and having limited inventory space. I'm like, have you found, what's his name? I've blanked now.
Hestu.
He's like, no. I'm like, oh my God.
Oh, no.
You have to go. No. I'm like, just Google it. It's okay. You've clearly missed it at the fish people that first. I mean, which can happen.
Yeah, there's so many
ways.
Right there, yeah.
There's so many ways to get to the fish people. You might not walk on that one road to get there. I was like, just Google it. It'll change your life. Because I'm like, you've got siege, right? Yeah, I've got like 30. I'm like, oh my God, you can unlock so much
upgrading.
So many open slots just waiting to be unlocked.
You have so much space for activities.
Yeah, exactly.
So much.
Yeah.
I think they improved that in Tears of the Kingdom by putting Hestu in like your main
base. He's right there. He's like, what's up?
Yeah. Yeah. But at the same time, you could miss him. Like, if you just like go to the main base once or twice and you're like, cool, I'm never coming back here because there's nothing to do here. And you never saw that he was there. Like,
I would. So now we complete. This is a Tears of the Kingdom podcast once more. You thought we were done. We brought it
always
right
has
back.
Been.
I'd love to see what sort of numbers they pull or stats from people's playthroughs, because I think there are so many variations. I mean, even the, like you said, the armor, I think that to me has been, it's been not frustrating, but it's not obvious what to do. I'm like, if you've not played one of these games and you have no clue that the fairy leads to like unlocking armor, and you go, oh, maybe this is just a random side quest, whatever, and you put no effort into it. And then it's like, well, you're just going to struggle with fights because you don't have good armor.
Yeah, and I found Tears of the Kingdom to be considerably more difficult than Breath of the Wild, especially in the early hours.
I think they just assume you have played Breath of the Wild.
Man, they do not hold back. So I've only now started getting to the point where I feel a bit more powerful. But then again, you still run into enemies that completely like one-shot you. Mm. And that's what you need, like the upgrade, the armor for. Like the stupid eye tentacle thing that I fought in the maze. You know, who arrives when you kill that. Like he was just absolutely wrecking me.
It's the Dark Souls of Zelda games. As they say.
It really is.
It's good though. I'm still, every time I pick up the game, I'm like, wow, have I not played this for so long? Like, it's good. Like, I absolutely just love playing it.
Game is genuinely fantastic.
Mm.
We played two rather fantastic games during the week as well.
Yeah.
Like I said, Forza Motorsport and Assassin's Creed Mirage. I don't think I'm going to rehash the entire reviews. No. Yeah, the reviews are up if you want to see them. But like, if you've missed them, you know, at least from my side with Forza, I haven't changed. My opinions haven't changed dramatically. I've played a bit more online. I still want to play a bit more. And yeah, they're cool. They're like those limited time events, like I explained in the review, where each online event, you only have a certain amount of time to enter it, and there's like a rolling list of events, and the time limited nature of them is meant to replicate like a race weekend. So when you enter into them, you have the opportunities to do like a practice event, a qualifying event, and then the feeder race. And depending on when you, there's a cutoff time for when you're able to enter an event, but like if you enter one quite late, I assume, I've not really done this, but I assume you'll have less time to practice before qualifying or stuff like that. But it's a cool format. I like that you do get this way to like learn the track that you're going to be racing on with the car that you decide to use, because like the events are denoted by like a series of car, like the ranking E, D, whatever, C, B, blah, blah, blah. And then it's like an open series, so you can kind of choose whichever car within that spec you want to race with. But yeah, it's cool. I like the qualifying aspect of it. It really like lets you hone in the work you did during the practice session. And then the feature race is quite neat. I think, you know, they've got a penalty system for online play where players who are overly aggressive in terms of collisions and stuff like that will be penalized in the race. And then thereafter, like, their matchmaking will be altered depending on like their driver rating. And that's been in previous games. And I can't say for certain whether it's working better here or not, but I do find people are slightly more reserved in a race. It's not just everyone diving into the first corner at absolute full speed, just expecting another car to be their chicane, really, which is fucking nonsense because like, there's no rewinds or anything online, so it just ruins your race. But yeah, it's fun. It's cool. I don't know if I'll play tons of multiplayer. I've never been that sort of person who puts a lot of time into Forza multiplayer. I'm still chipping away at the campaign, which is quite extensive, and I'm still enjoying that quite a bit. So yeah, Forza Motorsport is really good. Like I said in that review, you should go watch it. Like, it's a really, really good simulation race and one of the best feeling ones I've played. And I think it's a very good complete package today that Turn 10 can now build upon for years to come as they plan to, as far as I know. So, yeah,
it's no track mania, though. You know.
Listen, what is, though? What is? It's no Mario Kart. It's no Trackmania.
It's no Kirby. Let's be honest. You know,
it's Kirby.
It's just none of the above. But yeah, it's funny because Forza Horizon 5 is the first Forza Horizon I actually played, like to completion, and I really enjoyed it. And I've always thought like I'd probably enjoy motorsport because I love Gran Turismo. I mean, there's a huge gap in my Gran Turismo play history where I played 1 and 2 and then I didn't touch it until like last year. Was it last year or the year before? 7? No, I enjoyed that.
Oh, yeah.
I don't hate the more simulatory stuff, so I probably would put some time into
Forza. Yeah, I think given your love with Gran Turismo, I think you'd dig Forza Motorsport. Like, but that's the thing. Two very similar games.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's Xbox's. It was Xbox's like answer to Gran Turismo.
To Gran Turismo,
I mean.
And for a very long time, it was like, because Gran Turismo lost its way for a bit.
Yeah.
You know.
It was,
I think,
lost, but now it's found.
I think the last Gran Turismo definitely steered that right in the back direction. Back in the right direction. But for a long time, Forza was the one and only like console racing sim that you could get that was really good, because GT was just doing its own fucking thing.
Garbage.
Yeah, doing shit like GT Sport and nonsense like that. But yeah, it's cool to have two very, very top tier ones on both consoles now. I think that's pretty cool.
But to your point, neither will be Mario Kart, which is the superior car racing game by a mile. So
yeah, Mario Kart 8 Deluxe is definitely the best simulation racing game I've played.
Keeping that mantle.
Until Gran Turismo and Forza put in blue shells, what are we doing? Like, what? We're just wasting time.
I would pay money to see that mod.
There was a game like that, and it was brilliant, and it was called Blur, and no one played it. And that game was literally like Forza Horizon, because it had real cars, and it was more arcadey and whatever, but then it had the bullshit powers of Mario Kart, and it ruled. It was nice. Such a cool game. And no one played it, and they never made another one. It makes me sad.
That's a whole conversation for another day of where certain games or franchises might be today if we had the internet or, I don't know, to spread the
good word. If I'm not mistaken, Blur is owned, or the franchise is owned by Activision. So
what?
Microsoft.
Stop making Call of Duty and make Blur 2, you cowards.
Up to you, man. Yeah, just make Blur 2. That'd be fucking awesome. Give the Blur license to Playground Games and just let them do it. Oh my
gosh, imagine. Xbox exclusive.
Or they just make a Blur-focused DLC for Forza Horizon.
I mean, does Motorsport get DLC akin to what Horizon does? With, you know, Horizon's had Lego and Hot Wheels and all sorts of expansions. I don't know if Motorsport.
I'm not sure. I don't think it'll be like that. No. Because, like, the Horizon expansions have more been like, here's this separate portion of the map that,
that's
you know, never existed before you can go to now. I think with Forza Motorsport, what they do for DLC is here's a, like, bunch of new tracks. Mm. Or a whole bunch of new cars from a specific manufacturer, and that they just like grow out the library organically like that. Maybe they'll add new events to the single player, but I don't think it'll be like fun crossovers with like Lego or Hot Wheels or stuff like that. No, probably not.
That's Forza.
It'd be cool. I'd love to drive a Hot Wheels car on the track with simulation physics. But
imagine.
Yeah, that'd be sick. Yeah, or a Lego car on Kalami. That'd be really cool.
Grief.
But I don't think they'll do that.
That's Forza. I'm sure this time next week, I don't know, will we have played other stuff? I don't know. It's like a brief little respite before Spider-Man 2 and my boy.
Well, this
Mario
time
drops.
Next week, this time, so people will be listening to this on Monday the 9th, correct?
Yes.
So the next episode will launch on Monday the 16th, which is the embargo lift date for Spider-Man. Now, we don't have Spider-Man.
We don't have code.
I do not think we're going to get Spider-Man before that embargo.
Get me code of Spider-Man.
I would love code of Spider-Man. It would be cool if we got it just before that embargo so we could at least give impressions, but I don't know. Code for Sony games, at least, has been very limited pre-release locally for a very long time. I think you'll recall God of War, we got before the embargo.
No, God
as
of
well.
War, we actually got. I think we got that. That was one exception. We got that quite ahead of time.
No, but we got it at like a second wave. I recall people had it almost like 3 weeks before it was coming out, and we got it about a week before.
Mm.
So we didn't have enough time to do a full review at embargo, but we had time to be like, we've been playing this, you know.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping that will be the case for Spider-Man, but we'll see. We'll see.
We'll see.
Alan Wake will certainly not get a review code because there's no physical distributor for that. So there's no one distributing that locally. So we'll just probably end up buying that.
Alan, wake me up when we've got code.
Hey.
Hey. So I've been playing. That's like, we're getting so good at these segues.
Oh my God.
As Alessandro said, we did speak at length about two games, one being Forza Motorsport and other being
Forza
Assassin's Creed Mirage, which I have been playing. And again, I'm not going to rehash too much. I would say if you'd like to know more about the game, we do speak about it at length. But to recap, Assassin's Creed Mirage is the latest mainline game in the franchise, and it is, for all intents and purposes, it's not a reboot, but it is an attempt to take the franchise back to its earliest days, where it's less RPG, more stealth, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
And as I said in my review, on that front, I feel that Ubisoft have nailed it. but for better or for worse, because I think original fans of the franchise, i.e. Alessandro and a whole lot of other people, have missed that, you know, those shorter, tighter games where it is actually just, it's stealth and it's like a 10 to 20, maybe 25 hour experience. No, there's no grinding, no fancy schmancy RPG elements. However,
my hidden blade kills people immediately.
It just kills people. It's not like, oh, they're 10 levels higher than you. Whoops.
Yeah.
Go grind out. Not that that's how Assassin's Creed is, but you get the point. However, on the flip side, if you are a modern day Assassin's Creed fan, you started on Origins, Odyssey or Valhalla, and you are expecting a RPG dense, huge open world, this game is probably potentially going to disappoint you. It does have sort of a middle ground, because it is an Assassin's Creed of yesteryear, with light RPG elements. So as I said in the review, there's no levels necessarily. You unlock skill points as you do things, you know, main quests and side quests, and you use those skill points to, you know, unlock certain things. You know, you can carry more potions if you go down a certain skill tree, or you can do certain other things, like you can crouch and people highlight around you because you've gone down the stealth skill tree. It's very light on that front. And even in terms of weapons and armor, I remember in Assassin's Creed Valhalla, it was like, okay, you get different pieces of armor, and then there's different tiers to unlock with them, and then you need to go find a whole lot of resources to do them and schematics and. Yeah, it's literally like you've got, oh, and also on that, you can also have a whole lot of different weapons. In Valhalla, for example, you could have a dagger in your left hand and an axe in your right hand. Like, it was flexible in that regard. You could really customize your character to fight however you wanted. In this game, you've got a sword, and you get different swords with different perks, but you're not now going to be changing your fighting style or anything like that. It's very linear in that regard. They want you to fight a certain way in this game. I've got a surprise coffee delivery.
Sure.
Some things never change. Man, love to see it. And then the same applies to armor, where you can unlock armor pieces, but it's literally like a set. You're not unlocking a pair of pants and then like a shirt. And it's like, no, you get an armor set. And that armor set will have three tiers of things that it improves upon, and like that's that. If you are coming in expecting this deeply customizable Basim in Baghdad, in this prequel story, like, I think you might be a bit disappointed. However, if you're coming for an Assassin's Creed, which does, you know, force you to focus more on stealth, then I think you're going to have a really good time with this game. And again, just for context, like, I do not have a history with this franchise at all. Valhalla was my first Assassin's Creed. So I think there are things in this game that you've pointed out to me were actually from previous games. Like, in the review I mentioned, in this game you get like a wanted level and you can tear down posters to bring it down. You're like, just like Assassin's Creed 2. I'm like, oh, I would never have known that, but that's a mechanic straight from one of the original games then. And all that said, like, I'm really enjoying the game. I think it's maybe a little bit of a slow burn to get into it. Now I'm really invested in finding out what Basim's doing and what's going on in Baghdad. I'm having a good time.
It sounds cool. Like, I'm pretty keen to dive into it, despite some of the there's definitely some mixed reviews there with I think some people critiquing that maybe it goes back to the old roots, maybe a bit too hard, and I've seen a lot of criticism over the game's story and characters. They're not as like engaging as there maybe could have been and stuff like that. But from a mechanical point of view, I'm really keen to give it a go, because it does sound like the sort of game I've been like hoping Ubisoft would make for a long time now. And like I said during our review, I hope that we get more of these interspersed with the, you know, very RPG heavy ones that we are definitely getting, that, you know, Ubisoft has announced the one set in Japan, the one set in like weird, which Germany, there's a bunch of RPG ones coming. So yeah. I think, yeah, smaller ones like this would be cool.
I think the franchise is big enough now that they could 100% do that, where you know, like, oh, this is the RPG Assassin's Creed this year, and then next year is the smaller, not smaller, but the less RPG focused one. I don't see the harm in that. But Joe,
and it kind of aligns with some, I saw a lot of talk on Twitter this week from game developers being like, the industry is now primed for these standalone expansions or like expansion sequels, they call them. So if you think of the model that Naughty Dog followed with Lost Legacy, it's not a full-blown sequel to something, but it is definitely more extensive than a like expansion, and it sits standalone. Like, there seems to be this agreement that that's the way forward to help compensate for the ballooning like costs and time that it takes to make a full-blown sequel, so like a Miles Morales as well. So like, this could be Ubisoft's form of that. It's like, in between their gigantic RPG ones, they make these smaller ones that are more old school, and that'd be pretty cool. They could explore some cool stories with that.
But I mean, I think you said this, well, not you breaking this news, but I think it's been said that this was actually planned DLC for Valhalla, and then they just
split it up.
I mean, that's fun. I mean, Valhalla came out a long time ago. I think it's cool that it's its own standalone thing. I don't know, like, I understand people not enjoying it, but I've personally enjoyed the shorter, more focused experience. And like, I think I've rattled on about this even in the review, and Noelle said the same thing in her review. Just the lore. Then when I say lore, I don't mean like Assassin's Creed lore. I'm talking just the history pieces on Baghdad and just that culture and that set time period. Like, I've loved reading those things. Because I don't know much about that part of the world and that period of time. So it's been really fascinating just running through, doing Assassin's Creed things, unlocking a lore entry and going like, oh, here's how camels came to prominence. Like, it's just been very interesting. Random things like that, like, oh, you're hunting a target in this building. There's a lore entry of like, why this building is so significant, you know, because back then, X, Y, Z. And I've really enjoyed that aspect of it. I think Assassin's Creed are really good at highlighting a period of history and a setting and a location and just, you know, educating people about it. And I'm enjoying that aspect of it as well.
Yeah. No, I'm very keen to get stuck in based on what you've described, because it sounds exactly like what I wanted from an Assassin's Creed game.
Yeah.
Having enjoyed Origins and not really got into either Odyssey or Valhalla, like, this is kind of what I've been waiting for to reignite my passion for the franchise. Because I just think, like you said, I don't think the RPG approach is bad. I just, the way that game has ballooned in scope is just so overwhelming to me. There's just too much.
But also in tonality of like, you're playing Assassin's Creed.
And you're not really assassinating.
Yeah, when I think about Valhalla, I'm like, at no point do I associate Vikings with stealth. it's not a thing.
I mean, Valhalla was very evident with that. Like, the stealth in that game was like, it was almost throwaway.
It was there, but you had no, there was no incentive to at all be stealthy. From what I can
and
tell,
Odyssey kind of leaned into that as well. It became very like mystically like charged. You had lots of like mythology and powers and listen, I think Origins, for what I've played, you know, it's the only one of the three that I finished, but I've definitely played the others quite extensively. Origins is the one that skirted the balance a bit better, where it was still very much an Assassin's Creed game. I felt, and the RPG stuff was definitely there, and I still hated the fact that, like, oh, if I try to assassinate you with my level and you are X number of levels above me, I will just hurt you, I won't kill you. Like, that shit irritated me. But, like, there was still a big emphasis on stealth, and, like, there were ways you could clear out whole camps stealthily. And And, you know, you can rarely take on tons of enemies at a time because they would kill you very quickly. Mm. So, yeah, I like that game a lot. I just think that also that setting is incredible. It's not too big.
I need to revisit that one, I think.
It's a great game. Really, really enjoyed it. Yeah.
Cool. But that is Assassin's Creed Mirage. Look at us talking for 40 minutes.
Bad video games. Look at us. Who would have thought?
Yeah.
Should we fly over to game releases then?
Game releases.
Don't think there's much this week in, you know, the wake of stuff coming fairly soon. But let's see.
September.
We are looking at games from yesterday, I guess. October 7th all the way up until October 13th. My God, how the hell?
You said it wasn't a lot, but there's a lot.
No, I'm more just like, how are we at October 13th by the end of this week? Okay. Anyway, yeah, it's kind of nuts. October 13th, October 13th. Okay, it's not too much. There's one game I didn't realize was out this week. That's cool. So we've got Land of the Vikings coming to PC October 9th. Then we've got the official release of Forza Motorsport because it's been out since Friday. If you had the early access version that you paid extra for, but yeah, October 10th is the actual release. That's when it pops up on Game Pass and stuff like that. That's Xbox Series X and S and PC. Star Wreck PC October 10th. Then we got Honkai Star Rail. That's the new, the new game from the Genshin Impact team. It's been on mobile for quite a while now, but it's coming to PS5 finally on October 11th.
Money making machine, is that called?
Sure, it's gonna make tons of money. Haunted House coming to pretty much every console under the sun.
What is
VCS? Virtual
Console Switch.
VCS console.
VCS.
The Atari VCS.
What?
A 2021 game console.
That is hilarious. In all our years of reading this list, that is the first time I've seen VCS.
I didn't even know this thing existed.
I knew it existed, or I knew it was a concept. I didn't realize that it was actually released and it is a platform.
Let's see the main game list for VCS. Okay, there's a lot of like old games. I'm just trying to see if there's anything that I'd recognize.
Haunted House must be a retro game then, I'm assuming.
Probably.
Why else would it come to VCS?
Yeah, probably. Yeah, these are all very retro games that were just re-released. Yeah, sure. Okay. Oh, it's also got a cloud gaming service. So maybe that's why it's coming through cloud gaming. I don't know.
Nice.
Anyway, that's coming out on October 12th. River City Rival Showdown, PS4, Switch, and PC, October 12th. Salt Sea Chronicles. Okay. PS5, Switch, and PC, October 12th. Lords of the Fallen is out this week. That's the sequel / reboot / this is the second game in the series, but we're rebooting it. Souls-like.
See, I
can... PC, PS5, Xbox.
I can respect this because the first game is called Lord of the Fallen, right?
I think the first one is called The Lords of the Fallen.
Oh, okay. Well, I've got to retract my statements. This is the worst.
Let me actually check the Lords of the Fallen. The second one's... Wait. No, the first one is just called Lords of the Fallen.
You're joking.
No. That was released in 2014. This one, Lords of the Fallen.
It's not even that long ago.
This one, Lords of the Fallen, is the exact same name.
But it's a sequel.
That is...
/ reboot.
I swear it was slightly different.
That is...
So it was called Lords of the Fallen 2. And it was originally set to be released in 2017. Then a new developer took over development duties. The game was re-revealed under the title The Lords of the Fallen. And then the game was then renamed again in March this year.
So much.
To Lords of the Fallen. So it was the Lords of the Fallen.
Game developers, hire me. I will help you name your sequels and reboots. I promise you, it's not rocket science.
That's hilarious. Because I do recall it being different, like slightly differently named. I
honestly thought the first game was Lord of the Fallen. And then I was like, haha, Lords of the Fallen. It's okay. It's
plural.
It's cool.
Hey.
Plural. Like, I get it. Now you've just ruined my whole month.
I'm so sorry. If it helps, the game does look pretty cool.
It does look good, yeah.
I like the whole mechanic that's borrowed from the medium where it's like two worlds existing at once. Mm. That's pretty neat. I'm keen to see how it reviews.
I had the game pre-installed, uninstalled now. Just
is it coming to Game Pass?
Nah, I'm kidding. I have no idea. Okay.
You just lied.
I just wanted to make the joke.
Okay. Sorry. I ruined it. I'm so sorry. I thought this game was called Submachine Gun, but it's just called Submachine. So sorry. Submachine : Legacy.
It's a history
coming
of submachine
PC
guns.
October 13th. Yeah. And then the last game for the week, The Grinch Christmas Adventures. It is October.
It's October.
It is too early for this.
If you follow
me
on Instagram, you'll see that at the end of September, they are just throwing Christmas stuff up and it really upsets me.
In September, it's bad.
M&S had a poster, one of those pull-up banners when we walked in, it's like, order your Christmas dinner. And I'm like, oh my God.
3 months in advance.
Are you serving like Michelin star food here that you got to roll out this service 3 months in advance? Like,
but have you ordered your Christmas dinner, Matthew?
I have not.
You're going to get to November and they're going to be like, we had this
We forewarned you.
We warned you. I can't wait for the Marks and, well, the Woolies, at least locally, because they keep putting Chuckles and fucking everything under the sun. They're just going to have like a Christmas gammon stuffed with Chuckles.
Oh, I mean, I'd like, eat it. I'm there.
No, what the fuck? No, dear God, no.
I'm there. Take my money.
There is so much Chuckle stuff now. There's like hot chocolate powder that is Chuckles branded. There is Chuckles milkshakes. There is like, okay, there's one thing that's pretty good. It's the biscuits. They took the orange Chuckles and they made it a shortbread biscuit covered in chocolate. Pretty good.
Stop.
Pretty good.
How do you feel about Maltesers? Is it Maltese or Maltesers?
I've always known it as Maltesers as well. I might be wrong though. I think they're nice. They're like the red Chuckles. They've got malt and red. Yeah, it's the same thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
They're pretty good. I can't eat the red Chuckles anymore though because I tried the Chuckles ice cream and for some fucking bizarre reason, that ice cream is literally, the entire ice cream is just malt flavored and that is so intense that it ruined that flavor for me. So now I can only eat the orange ones. I can only eat the shortbread ones. Gosh. I can't do the malt
anymore.
You're
getting old. It's too malty for me.
It's gross. Listen, it's not just me. Shani had the same reaction.
You're both getting old. An easy answer.
Stop exposing me like this.
You guys are the same age, right?
No. Shani is a year younger than me.
What's a year younger when you're like 80?
Old. Yeah, exactly. Wow, that's rude. Jesus. You're older than us. What are you talking about?
Whatever. News.
God, soon you're going to be in a wheelchair.
Oh my God. I would really struggle to get to our apartment. It's a lot of stairs.
Lenska's going to have to get real strong to carry
up. Oh my gosh, just eat me up from the bottom.
Yeah.
Carry for who?
Like when Kratos throws a trace over gaps, just with one arm. Just
absolute best. I don't know what to headline with this week because there isn't, I mean, there's news, but there's nothing like, whoa, I can't believe this is happening. I mean, I guess The Last of Us 2?
I guess, I think Redfall is maybe getting fixed.
Redfall is apparently, well, not apparently.
Maybe?
It got a long-awaited performance mode on Xbox, among other things, in a recent big patch. Now, let me tell you why this news makes me laugh. Because just this week, in our own Discord, we were talking about Redfall and what do Xbox do with this franchise? Do they just quietly sunset? And I was like, I think they just quietly sunsets it because it wasn't a success. Just pull the funding, like as sad as it is, and then you know, redirect your attention to a new game or, I don't know, supporting other studios. Lo and behold, like the next day, a big Redfall patch is like, well, don't let me predict your lots of numbers because I don't know what I'm talking about, apparently.
Yeah, I don't know. I've seen, when was it? It was a few weeks ago, I'm not sure, that someone from Microsoft, I can't recall who it was, basically said that they plan that in 10 years, Redfall will be a game that people love playing. And I'm like, that's a long time. That is like more than a console generation's worth of time for you to be like, yeah, yeah, by then people will enjoy Redfall. Like, no one's going to be thinking of Redfall.
I do wonder if because of its bad launch, if it will get a cult following. Like, there might be, I think
for that it needs to be like endearing in some way. And I just feel like part of what makes Redfall not fun is that it's just so lifeless, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think if thinking of the games that have like strong cult followings, it's stuff like Metal Gear Rising, for example. Mm-hmm. Not a bad game, just not a game that sold incredibly well. But like you play that game and it's good. Like it's really, really fun. Same with, say, Beautiful Joe or Wonderful 101 from Platinum Games. Oh, wow. All my examples are Platinum Games. I just realized that. But it's like games that are underappreciated, not because they're bad games and then they get cult following. It's just like not many people took notice of them.
Resident Evil 6, am I right?
The
game's secretly good. We all know it.
The game is not so secretly terrible, and it's a bad Resident Evil game.
It's a good action game. I will die on this.
Resident Evil 5 is a good example of that, though. Like, yeah. I think in the reverse way, like that game sold incredibly well because it came out after Resident Evil 4.
Yeah.
And then a lot of people were like really down on it. But I think we're at a point where people are like,
they appreciate it.
That game is a great co-op game. Like, yeah, it is a bad Resident Evil game in terms of like being scary and there's like some problematic elements there. But it's a fun as hell co-op game. And yeah, I agree with that. So, you see, you can't even say Redfall's a fun as hell co-op game, even though it's designed that way. So, but who knows? I don't know. It's clear from this news that Microsoft is improving it. Like I said, the biggest parts of this is that it runs at 60 FPS on Xbox now, which is like, yeah, it should have launched like that. But yeah, we'll see. I'm still not so sure that this will save Redfall.
I don't think
this is the biggest parts of Redfall that, you know, was a problem. I think it fundamentally has design issues that cannot be changed. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
In other news, I suppose, should we just tick off the Last of Us news in double ways? Mm-hmm. So, The Last of Us Part 2 Remastered listed on Naughty Dog Dev's LinkedIn. And I think there have been rumors of this being a thing, The Last of Us Part 2 getting a remaster, which, to be honest, like I part of me doesn't get it, but I get it. It's the same thing that happened with the original Last of Us back in the day. It had a PS3 launch and it came out as a PS4 version. So yeah, maybe this is getting a remaster for modern platforms with all extra bells and whistles, despite this game looking real good on PS4 already. Yeah, I don't know. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, I'm keen. I mean, it depends. It depends how far they go with this. Like,
yeah,
I don't think this is the same as the sort of remake they did for the first Last of Us. I suspect this will just be like the name suggests, like a remaster. So like higher performance and slightly better looking and stuff like that. I definitely think they're going to do this, especially when you consider some of the stuff that's happened at the studio this week that we'll get into soon. It makes sense that this might be a logical stopgap for them as they move on to what presumably will be The Last of Us 3 next. So, yeah.
Uncharted 5. Let's go.
Yeah, no.
But yeah, on The Last of Us news, Last of Us studio Naughty Dog is cutting developers. You hate to see it. Yeah, so the subheader is the PlayStation's first party studio behind Uncharted and The Last of Us Part 2 is laying off dozens of contractors.
So before like I was a bit confused by this initially because I was like, contractors by virtue of being contractors are in limited contracts anyway. So like if their contracts are just expiring, that's not them being laid off. That's just their contracts expiring. But it seems that this is the case here is that their contracts are being prematurely
terminated, like,
killed. Yeah. So that is in essence kind of similar to a layoff, even though it's not a permanent employee. So the wording is a bit weird, but like you get what we're talking about. Yeah.
Yeah.
It says a lot of it came from QA, which is kind of shitty.
Naughty Dog, like, our games are quality. We don't need you to tell us that.
Well, it's been previously reported that QA is one of the worst parts at Naughty Dog, like one of the worst jobs there. So for them to also have their jobs cuts is kind of like a bad look, I think. Again, contractors is a tricky thing because, like, between projects, like, if they are definitely not going to have something playable that needs testing for the next couple of months, they don't need a QA department of 30 people just sitting there, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
This is a fairly common thing for studios to go through, and this is why they have contractors, is because there's certain jobs that aren't required at every phase of production.
Yeah.
They're only needed in full-scale production, not pre-production, for example. So, yeah, I don't know. The part of this news that is very interesting to me is that now Kotaku is kind of corroborating a report that good old Jason Schreier published in June that suggested that their multiplayer The Last of Us game was kind of like on hold after a negative internal review by Bungie. Sony, now having owned Bungie, are using Bungie to evaluate the progress of live service games at their other studios, and it seems that Bungie didn't see long-term viability for the project that Naughty Dog was working on. Not that the quality was bad, but that, you know, from a live service perspective, it didn't have legs. And now Kotaku's reporting that while the game isn't completely cancelled, the game is basically on ice at this point. And this comes back to the previous story where, like, if this is indeed the case, it would make sense, A, for QA contractors to not be required currently, because they would probably be moving on to like a remaster project and then moving on to like The Last of Us 3.
Yeah.
Both of which would be in earlier production and the need for QA is not required right now.
Yeah.
So it kind of all like makes sort of sense. You know what I mean? So, we'll see. I just wish Sony was a bit more transparent with this sort of stuff. You now have had two individual reports about this game not being cancelled. Like, if there's a bit more clarity on what's happening, there's far less speculation. I just think get out ahead of it and be like, this is the case, you know?
Yeah.
But right now the narrative is like, ooh, Naughty Dog's live service game was garbage and they've had to cancel it. When in actual fact, it could be like, no, we just determined that this isn't the way we want to move forward, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know.
We don't know. I suppose speaking of games being cancelled, though, I think we touched on this last week, Sega's Hyenas being cancelled, but I think what came out this week is that it was Sega's biggest budget game ever, it is claimed.
Which is wild, because it definitely did not look like that.
And then, you know, in the same story, and Hollywood director Neil Blomkamp, who we'll know in South Africa for a number of reasons, reportedly provided story direction. So I skimmed through this piece. Who was the source here? Yeah, however, a new video published by Total War YouTuber Voland, corroborated by VGC's own sources, features claims that from anonymous developers that a lack of direction, disruptive engine change and overly cautious design contributed to the downfall of Hyenas. It's just interesting that this report has come out with, you know, that little tidbit of it is their biggest game. I'm like, oh my God, Sega. Sega have some big games under their belt. How much money did they pour into this game before they cancelled it?
Yeah. I like this line here. It's like, so Total Lack of Direction, Many of the leadership asleep at the wheel, but they never seem to lose their jobs. An engine change partway through the process, which is kind of insane for a... Like, that is almost a last resort type of thing. And then attempting to break into a saturated market while not committing to do anything adventurous with the game. This game would have been dead on arrival.
On arrival, yeah.
Like, 100% that line is indicative of where the project was from a developer standpoint. Like, it even... And it explains why maybe Sega just pulled the plug. Because they're like, if we release this thing, that means more money to sink into it, you know, supporting it or keeping it online. Like, and if it is just going to be dead on arrival, just cut the losses now. Like,
yeah.
Even though it was like on the verge of releasing, so
that's crazy. I mean, I think we touched on it last week with Jim Ryan leaving PlayStation and the whole games as a service approach that Sony have. It's like, how many of those games are going to be dead on arrival? Like, we don't know what they are, what they look like, but that is a very saturated space.
This could have been what Bungie was saying with maybe The Last of Us had a game idea and they were like, this is cool, but like, it's not doing anything novel. It's definitely not going to steal any mind share from any of the big games right now. You know, stuff like that. And you know, if Naughty Dog is putting it on ice now, that's a cost saving measure. Mm. They're not going to sink more. Well, Sony's not going to sink more money into that if they don't think it's going to.
Bungie were like, listen, you can't give your Firefly a light level. That is straight from Destiny. Yeah. Please.
You can't make your Fireflies warlocks, titans, and hunters. That's not how this works.
You can't have what's that guy, that vendor. Oh, I've just blanked now.
Damn. Zer.
Yeah, you can't have a character named Zer either. Neil Druckmann.
No,
like,
wizards
on
the moon were removed even from Destiny. Jesus.
Oh, damn it. Neil Druckmann's like, back to the drawing board. Oh, they got us. Yeah.
God damn it, why did they have to buy Bungie? We were so close.
The only studio they could have not bought. What other news is there? It feels like there's so little this week. I suppose this is one you can... I think this is actually the last piece. Let me just check. We've got Arcane Redfall, The Last of Us. That's it. We've got one last little piece. Hitman Blood Money Reprisal announced for Switch, iOS, and Android. You were pretty excited by this news, I think. Or not?
Yes, because I love Hitman Blood Money. This is the game that really got me invested into the Hitman series. And in many, I don't know how many people played this game, but like, if you've played the modern Hitman, the sandbox, you know, reboot that now has three entries in it, this Blood Money is the game that informed that the most recent games, like, the most. Because previously, Hitman games were very like linearly level based. They were still sandboxy to an extent, but it was like you start at this point, you end at this point. Blood Money was like you've got a campaign, which is like, I can't remember how many scenarios there were, but it was like maybe 9. But each of them is a level where you start and then the whole thing is just open to you.
And you kind of need to
figure out how to. And it was the first one in the series to introduce the idea of accidental kills, so making your kills look like happenstance and you getting away scot-free. Like, there's a really good level, I think it's the second one in the game, where you're at an opera house and there's so many different things you can do. There's like two targets, and I remember the way to get like the accidental kill was to sneak into the one target is like a guy who's rehearsing on stage, and you swap like his prop gun for a real gun, so your target gets shot on stage. And then when that happens, there's a guy in the audience who's your other target who freaks out and runs towards the stage. But if you've rigged the chandelier with like an explosive, you can, the view is very cool, where it splits the view, so it shows you critical moments that are happening even though you might not be in the room. So you could see this guy like shocked and freaking out and running, and I could remotely detonate like the chandelier and it would fall on him as he was running towards the stage. Now, me as a normal human looks at that and goes, that's fucking weird, that's suspicious. But like, the game is like, guess they thought it was an accident, and you just walk out the front door.
Wait,
it's great.
There was a loaded
so
gun
good.
And the chandelier fell like within seconds of each other. Oh my gosh.
Those two guys just died. Like, who? There's another one which is super, super good that takes place in like suburbia. There's actually a level in Hitman 2, the recent one, that is very similar to this. But like, you are trying to kill like a mob boss guy, but his kid is having a birthday party.
I know.
I know one of the ways you can infiltrate it is like you can scope out that there's this clown in a van coming for the party and you can just murder him and take his disguise. And then you can just enter the party as this clown and walk like scot-free around the house. Or you can sneak into a house next door, which has kids' treehouse, and set up like a sniper point there and just take out the guy like that. The possibilities in Blood Money like will probably seem trivial compared to what is possible now in a game, but like you can see the ideas. Yeah. I mean, this game is like from 2008 or something like that. Yeah. Like that was so novel at the time, and I love that game. Yeah. I think it has one of the most ridiculous endings as well, and I love it, and I can't wait for people to play it. It's so good.
I mean, I love this opening line of the overview. So Feral Interactive describe it as, well, they say, this is a sparkling version of the stealth classic. You've lost me. I don't want static water.
there's also really good puns for every level. So one level where all your targets, it's in Mardi Gras, and all your targets are dressed up as crows. The level's called A Murder of Crows. And I was like, oh, yeah, I love this.
You know that was game. Genuinely probably somebody throwing the line out and then the whole team going, yeah, we'll build a whole level around that. It's cool. That's cool.
So good. It's such a good game. I love it so much. And then they went and made Absolution, which is like the most linear Hitman ever created. It's like,
what
if
happened?
If you took a first-person shooter and combined it with Hitman, that's what Absolution was. Like, I do not understand how they went from Blood Money to that. It was just bonkers. Like, and don't listen to Darren. That game sucks. Absolution sucks. It's so shit.
Loved
fucking cover shooter Agent 47. Like, get out of here.
Well, was it a first person game? No, it's still third person.
It wasn't, but it might as well have been. Like, it was so linear, and then the disguise system was so fucking bullshit that you had to, like, if you had to disguise and someone in, you know, like, they didn't even have to know that you had taken the disguise. They just suspected that it was you, which kind of defeats the purpose of having a disguise. Mm. And then you could tip your hat and the meter of detection would slow down. But it was still a meter that just went up. So it was like, it doesn't matter if I perfectly took out this guy and stole his disguise. Like, people would still spot me. It was bullshit. That
just like
sucks.
Real life, you tip your hat. You've seen Netflix, Netflix's You, right?
Yes. It's 100% that, literally that.
We've all established that
you just need a hat and a coat, and then
this is discussions at my office. It's the best. We have the best conversations where, you know, Joe's key to his superpower is the hat. 100%. He stands there broad daylight, and the person he's stalking sees him, puts the hat on, he's gone. Like, well, where did you go? Great.
That later season is so weird. There's so many inconsistencies with how he's able to do things. You're right, he's got superpowers. He's got superpowers. The amount of shit he manages to do in fractions of time make zero sense.
Yeah. It's great. It's
a great series. It's good.
That's gaming news for this week. We've got Hitman and
Joe is actually the real Hitman, to be honest.
Joe's a Hitman. Cool. Shall we get to questions?
If you want to send us questions, you can email us checkpointchatpodcast@gmail.com. You can find us on social media at Checkpoint Chat. What's on the docket for today?
I saw on Instagram we had some questions. Please hold. We have a question from we have two questions from your boy Chilla ZA. So, first question is, when do we get Harini's live streaming the game of the year, Baldur's Gate 3? Let me tell you, I have no answer. I haven't started streaming yet. So, at this stage,
never.
It's not happening, ever. But I don't know, I've heard enough people rave about Baldur's Gate where I feel that I can't not play it at this stage. It's just a matter of finding the time to commit a lot of playtime to it, because it is a long game. There's no ways I can speed through a game like this. Like, it is an investment. And I know I'm probably the biggest hypocrite. I'm like, I can't pour in 100 hours into this game. And then I go and I play another game for 100 hours. But the difference is that I know this game is long. It's just wrapping my head around it.
Yeah.
It's like Tears of the Kingdom. I know it's a long game. I'm going to enjoy that over many months on my Switch, separate to my primary console gaming. Do you have any plans to play Baldur's Gate 3?
I do. I do want to play it. I genuinely have no idea. I'm kind of like putting it down as my December game, like my holiday game. But that means I need to finish
everything else.
Tears of the Kingdom before then, because otherwise that's my December game. So yeah.
It's just never happening, man.
Probably never happening, no.
And then next question from Chilo. He asks, what grade in school did you feel was the most difficult for you? This is an easy answer for me. Grade 11.
I was leaning towards that as
grade
well.
Grade 11 actually was like a... And even it's weird because I remember teachers going like, oh, yeah, grade 11, it's difficult. You go, oh, how could it be? How could grade 11 be harder than matric? Those grade 11 exams
matric was easy.
But I have a put your tinfoil hat on. I put my little conspiracy hat on and I think that they intentionally make a grade 11 way harder so that matric doesn't seem so overwhelming or stressful.
Like by then, you know, the pressure of the last exams is kind of done because you've done these ridiculous ones in like grade 11.
I vividly remember matric being like, I mean, not to say that there's no effort required, like obviously, but I remember it being a lot easier. Like I loved my matric year just because like it felt way less pressure to grade 11. I mean, final exams aside, you're always worried like, oh my God, am I going to pass? But the actual workload and exams and studying just felt less intense.
Funnily enough, like the exact same thing happened in university.
Mm.
It's like the year prior to the last year was by far the hardest. Mm. Like the final year almost felt like, okay, you're done. The only way you're not going to pass this is if you actually do nothing, you know. whereas the third year was like the most grueling. I mean, the third year for me was so hard. I did it twice. It was nice. It was great, you know. But yeah, I tend to agree with you. Grade 11 was hardcore. Like
it really was.
I'm trying to think of. Yeah, grade 11 is definitely up there. For some reason, I still recall grade 9 being a bit hectic. I don't know why.
But you know what? That might be. It's because it's the year before you choose your subjects as well.
So I think there's there's a lot of pressure on that. And also, I don't recall like grade 8. You know, like the transition between primary and high school being that hectic.
No.
The transition between high school and university, gigantic.
Huge.
And the most stressed I've ever felt in my life. Absolute trauma.
I think I've told the story many times, but I'll never forget that first week when I studied. So I did RT out of high school. And that first week in calculus, like, okay, we're going to recap your entire matric syllabus in this week. And I was like, what?
In like a week, yeah.
Excuse me, it took me a whole year plus to learn all of this. What do you mean you're going to do it all in a week? And you do it and it just exponentially increases every week. Like, cool, now we're going to introduce this thing. Now you're going to need to know how to do this. I'm like, oh my God, this is just too much.
School does not prepare. I still think this is the case. Like school is so on the rails, like everything you need is provided for you. And then you shift to university and they're like, fuck that. You need to understand how to like learn by yourself and you need to learn how to be autonomous and this, but they expect it immediately. So like the jarring shift of that is hard. And I can understand why people in their first few months of university feel like, well, I can't do this. Like, because it's like 12 years of being told how to work, you're now immediately told that that's not the way this is going to work, and it's traumatizing to a degree. So
please tell me that's pun intended. Traumatizing, to a degree.
See, I make all these great puns and I don't even realize them. Like, it's what's the fun in that then? God damn it.
I'm here to point
them out. I did one in my review for Forza, and when it was nice. Being edited, it was like, pun intended. I was like, fuck, I didn't even realize that was a pun.
Like, I mean, you did the same thing earlier with the Gran Turismo. You're like, oh yeah, they steered the franchise back. And then
oh my God, like, you see, I didn't even know. Oh my God.
I was like, oh, good.
I'm
good
so
pun.
Bad at this shit.
Nah, so no, you don't even realize. I'm going to point it out every time. Yeah. Every time. Would you say that high school is a poor tutorial to university?
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah. High school is, you know, the grade 11 is like Father Gascoigne. And then university is, Vicar Amelia.
Nice.
First year just fucks you up. It's like, oh, you think you're good at this game.
Sick. So in Elden Ring terms, grade 11 is your good boy Margaret, the father.
Yeah,
Omen.
Yeah.
And then university is Melina.
No, university millennia, every year sorry. Of university is just millennia, just constantly like stomping on you.
Great to see us.
That's great. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
That is all the questions for this week. Which means
cool.
Roll credits.
Yeah, roll credits. If you want to send us questions and ask us what year of university Scott is more, you can email us
triplechatpodcast@gmail.com. Just ask us more about childhood trauma. We're here. We'll share it.
Yeah, God. Yeah, we're happy to share. This is our therapy. You can also find us on social media at Checkpoint Chat. That's been episode, 236? I forgot this was an hour ago. 236 of Checkpoint Chat. The month is going to continue being busy. We might do little reviews here or there as we get access to things, if we have time, when we have time, if it makes sense, all of that good stuff. But yeah, please check out the Forza and Assassin's Creed Mirage reviews on YouTube. They're also up on podcast services, but like, it's nice to see the game as well, I think. We captured quite a bit of footage for that.
Also,
so, yeah.
If you're an audio listener, give us some love on YouTube. What's the harm? Twice the love. We appreciate it. We put a lot of time and effort into both platforms. I hope you guys enjoy.
Matty especially published like 6 videos last week. It was nuts.
It was insane.
Man is working overtime. That's why he earns the big bucks.
I'm earning the big bucks.
Yeah, the big bucks. I mean,
love to see it.
A big number multiplied by zero is still
it's
big.
It's still big.
It's still zero.
A big number multiplied by -1 is still negative.
Yeah, it's true. It's a really big negative
wise wisdom,
number.
Not just a pretty face.
No Casio calculator here.
Casio calculator. Best.
Oh my God. This has been Checkpoint Chat episode 236. As always, we'll be back next week. We thank you so much for listening and we hope you have a delightful week. See you next time.
Bye.
Okay, bye.